And break everything, and I looked at the thermometer.
It was.
I had frost.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, April 3rd, 2017. Okay, we'll open, go out of order a little bit here, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3061, called Representative Lively.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3061 authorizes the court or other supervisory authority to prohibit persons on probation or post-prison supervision from using an anonymous text messaging service if the person is convicted of telephonic harassment, domestic violence, or drug dealing. The bill also creates a task force charged with studying the changes in Oregon law needed to regulate and prohibit the use of internet websites to send anonymous text messages for the purpose of harassing and abusing other persons and engaging in the unlawful delivery of a controlled substance. There is a -1 amendment before you today. The -1 amendment modifies the language surrounding a task force member by describing a survivor of electronic harassment rather than a victim of electronic harassment. With the -1 amendment, House Bill 3061 has no revenue impact, but it does have a fiscal impact, so the committee will need a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Schwartz, you can come up too. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. Can I just say that with that light behind you, Mr. Chair, it's hard to distinguish you, but I've got you. It's okay. I don't think I've ever been in this room, so it's a pleasure to be here before you today. Thank you. So this particular issue brought to me by Mr. Robert Schwartz, and since he brought it to me, I've talked with others, has to do with bullying, cyberbullying, and specifically with anonymous text messaging services. When we started talking about this bill and trying to do something about people bullying over the internet and that, it was not apparent early on that it was partly and mostly being done on anonymous text messaging services versus those others. So recently I just gathered some information, and I think if we read the newspapers and that, we'll see this is a growing issue in a lot of different ways. And like I said, again, I didn't realize it was anonymous services, but experiencing of online harassment. So 40% of adult internet users have personally experienced some variety of online harassment. And this is a Pew study that's recently out talking about online harassment of all types, but let alone there are. And it talks about, I mean, it goes all the way from offensive names, purposely embarrassing people, physically threatening people, stalking people online, harassed over a sustained period of time, and of course sexual harassment. So I'm not one of those that all of this online stuff necessarily makes a lot of sense or not and tries to avoid using it, but what I know and what I've read and what I talk to other people, some people are much better at it than I am, and the part that really disturbs me are those that are much better at it, that can really use it to their advantage to hide their identity when they're harassing other people. And so Robert Schwartz brought this to my attention when I was running for re-election. In fact, for the record, Robert was my opponent in the last election, and I agreed to work on this. But like I say, after we did, I talked to other citizens in my community that are sustaining the same thing. So I'm not one that normally comes and asks for task force. In fact, I don't know since I've been in office if I've asked for a task force, but given the complexity of this and the fact that these are anonymous sites, it seemed like something we ought to get ahead of instead of behind, and that's the reason I'm here to support it and support Robert.
Hey, thank you. Be sure to identify yourself for the record.
I'm Robert Schwartz, and thank you for having me. I couldn't be more eloquent than John, except to add that when I went to go get a restraining order, you're in the room with a bunch of other people, and everyone was there for the same reason, except no one looked like me, right? So everyone was either, pretty young, like a teenager, or from a marginalized community. And then I had, one young man was there, and he was horrified when his mother was telling about it, but he was a Christian child who wouldn't participate in some activities, and so he was getting harassed. And then a large portion of the people that were there, had on non-typical clothing and dressed in a purple hair, just fun kid stuff, right? But for, you know, whatever reason, found themselves on the receiving end of, you know, vicious anonymous attacks. And for me, I started, me and my fiance at the time, still together, we got a lot of these right during a custody hearing. And so, it you know, for me, it felt like witness tampering, because they were clearly from my ex-wife. And when I asked the police about it, they said they couldn't do anything about it, but they looked at it. And they thought it was from her, too, and they said that it happens all the time and that the most they could do was call her and tell her to stop, but that was, there was no, you know, no teeth. And, you know, me and John got a chance to know each other, and you know, when I mentioned this, he gave it some thought and decided to move forward, and that's why I'm here now. And thank you so much for hearing me, and I mean that. Thank you so much.
Any questions from anybody?
So, yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. So, John, I didn't catch if you said this at the very beginning. Are other states doing something similar to this?
Excuse me?
Do you know if other states are doing something similar to this?
That's a good question, and I don't know that for sure, Representative Olson.
Agreed. And this has to do with a lot of times you're using out-of-country servers to disguise where it's coming from. Okay, thank you very much. So we have the Dash 1 amendments.
Are we in a work session?
Yeah, we're in a work session. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We're in a work session on House Bill 3061.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3061.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3061. Are there any questions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3061 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3061 as amended with order to due pass with
subsequent
to Ways and Means. Thank you. Are there any questions about that? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. Next, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3077. And call Representative Reschke and Representative Williamson, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3077 requires the court, following a request from a victim, to order that the defendant not be given the victim's electronic mail address or identifying social media information unless the court finds good cause to authorize the release of that information to the defendant. There is a Dash 1 amendment before you today. The Dash 1 amendment moves the prohibition into the discovery process and eliminates the need of the victim to request the order. Instead, the default rule under the Dash 1 amendment is that a criminal defendant's lawyer may receive this information, but a court order is required before the district attorney or a defense lawyer may provide the information to the defendant. With the Dash 1 amendment, House Bill 3077 has no revenue impact, but we do not yet have a fiscal impact statement.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and honorable committee members. For the record, my name is E. Werner Reschke, state representative for House District 56, which encompasses Klamath and Lake Counties. Before I begin, I'd like to wish the chair a happy birthday on the record and hope there'll be some cake left over after my testimony.
It's all gone.
Let them eat cake, right? Okay. I'm before you today to modernize a law concerning privacy for victims of crimes. Today, the calendar reads 2017. We live in a modern world of technology, email, and social media. House Bill 3077 does two things. First, the Dash 1 amendment modernizes Oregon's discovery laws by adding the victim's email address and social media identifiers to the list of protective items. This list already includes address, telephone number, social security number, date of birth, and financial information. This information, important change, recognizes that in today's world, harassment and intimidation of a vulnerable victim is much more likely to occur via email and social media than it is via other medium. And these others are already protected under existing statute. If the information is necessary for the defendant's legal defense, there is a provision in the law that allows a judge to order its release. This simple amendment will provide a modest but meaningful barrier between victims and individuals that seek to inappropriately contact them. I urge the committee's adoption of the Dash 1 amendments and the passage of the bill. Second, HB 3077 allows for the modernization of communication between law enforcement and the victim by using electronic means. This accomplishes expedient, safe communication in our modern world. Finally, this bill follows Reschke's rules to good legislation in that it is only 2 pages or less. With that, I thank you for your consideration to keep victims of crime safe in our electronic-centric world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jennifer Williams, and I'm the state representative for House District 36. I could not say any of it any better than my colleague, Representative Reschke, did just now. This bill is, a good bill. You can most of the information that's already prohibited in statute during this discovery process can be found in almost everybody's social media, so it only makes sense to then include that those medium in the discovery statute. So I just want to publicly thank Representative Reschke for his work on this bill as well. Thank you.
Any questions, Representative Post?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a question for council, maybe for our good representatives here. There might be a fiscal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Post, we just don't have that back yet.
Okay. Because I'm trying to think, what fiscal would there be?
Just need the paperwork.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Can we call Kim Larson?
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Kim Larson. I'm Director of Victim Assistance with the Marion County DA's office. And I'm here today on behalf of ODAA and Marion County to testify in support of House Bill 3077 along with the Dash 1 amendments. As you've heard, the discovery statutes prohibit defense attorneys from providing copies of discovery to their clients without first redacting out those personal identifiers for victims. And so the Dash 1 amendments do something really important by extending that definition to include the email and the social networking identifiers that we know are so commonly used now. This is really important because as we continue to develop all of our new methods of communicating and just how we navigate the world now, everything's changing. And the laws need to evolve with those changes and to protect victim information along the way. As you can imagine, victim privacy is really important to victims. And many of the victims that we engage with in the criminal justice system often talk to us about being afraid of being retaliated against by the defendants or the defendant's family, and just being worried about who's seeing their information and where their information is going. So in our system that very often doesn't protect victim privacy very well, these protections are really critical, both to their sense of safety and to their sense of autonomy in controlling a little bit what happens with their information. Victims have a constitutional right to be reasonably protected from the defendant throughout the criminal justice process, so this is an important step in helping us carry that forward. The Dash 1 amendments contribute to our system being able to do that better and to provide better protections. So I would ask you to support House Bill 3077 and the Dash 1 amendments. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'd answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading on the Dash 1 amendment at the very end. Being a social media person, I want to make sure that we define social media. And it says, given the term, the social media has the meaning given that term in ORS 659A.330. And perhaps Vice Chair Williamson would know this better. So I did a quick scan through that. It just keeps using the phrase social media, but it doesn't really define social media. I mean, it defines it, but it, in other words, it doesn't name them. And at this point right now, holy cow, there's 15 social medias that I know of.
Well, my guess, Representative Post, is that we purposely did not name them for the reason of keeping the, not locking ourselves into a definition that is then outdated in a year or two, yeah.
And I'm glad you did then, because that's my part of my fear, because yeah, every time we have one, three more pop into place. I just want to make sure that nobody ever on look, you know much better than I do legislative intent versus sort of rule writing. And I'm scared to death that somebody somewhere misinterprets what social media
right.
is.
Did you see the sub B definition?
Under which number?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's 659A, 330. Go all the way to the bottom. It's 7B.
Which one?
7B.
7B. User-generated content, uploading, downloading video.
I hadn't gotten that far yet. Yeah. Thank you. Beauty.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I have the dash ones.
Mm-hmm. Ready? Are we in work? You want to go into work session?
I do.
I think it's a good
work
idea.
Session on 3077.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill 3077.
Representative Williamson moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 3077. We've just had a discussion about that. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 30. That's
not
it.
Ready, not ready to move today.
I knew that. We already talked about that.
Okay, close the work session on House Bill 377 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2593.
Yeah.
We call Representative Olson.
If we got John Frenery. Frenery.
I apologize.
John Frenery.
It's all right.
And John and Detective Frenery, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2593 requires that child pornography in criminal cases remain in the custody of a law enforcement agency or the court. The bill allows an expert for the district attorney or the defendant to conduct a forensic analysis of the material based on a demonstrated need. If the court finds that the forensic analysis cannot be accomplished while the material remains in the custody of a law enforcement agency or the court may authorize the off-site analysis of the material subject to a protective order. There are three amendments posted on OLIS today. The dash one amendment clarifies the standard applicable to authorizing off-site analysis. The dash two amendment clarifies the court's role and clarifies that the court's role in possessing the material is secondary to the law enforcement agency, that the court will only possess the material in connection with a court proceeding. Finally, the dash three amendment authorizes prosecuting attorneys and law enforcement agencies to duplicate material for investigative or prosecutorial purposes and eliminates the ability of the court to release the material for off-site analysis. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative from the Albany area. House Bill 2593 comes to you as a result of a conversation that we had during the interim committee. If you'll recall, where Detective John Trinari was there and shared a little bit his concerns, what was happening with the evidence issue, especially when it came to sexually explicit material. So as a result of that, we've had this conversation, and this is a spinoff from that conversation that we had several months back now, and it really makes sense. It gives some latitude and control and direction of what we do with that, but also, again, the constitutional right protection for the victim. So
Take it away. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and esteemed members of the committee. My name is John Trinari. I come before you today as an Oregon resident, as a father, and as a technologist specializing in cybercrime investigations and digital evidence forensics to provide brief testimony in support of House Bill 2593. Technology advances have brought us all wonderful conveniences that we enjoy every day, but advances in technology has also unintentionally allowed for a particularly insidious type of child sexual exploitation to develop. Online child sexual exploitation obviously didn't exist when we were all kids, but in the span of a generation, it has grown pandemically, hiding in the shadows of the internet, replicating like a virus, and infecting nearly every method of data storage and digital communication. Like all pandemic viruses, online child sexual exploitation is able to grow and spread quickly. Unlike Ebola or H1N1, though, a digital file depicting a child being sexually abused can be easily replicated and copies transmitted around the world in less than a second. Child pornography is weaponized data that targets our kids worldwide. Congress understood as much in 2006 when, in consideration of the Adam Walsh Act, it made legislative findings including, quote, every instance of viewing images of child pornography represents a renewed violation of the privacy of the victims and a repetition of their abuse. And, quote, it is imperative to prohibit the reproduction of child pornography in criminal cases so as to avoid a repeat of the violation of abuse of the victims, so long as the government makes reasonable accommodations for the inspection, viewing, and examination of such materials for the purposes of mounting a criminal defense, end quote. Some may argue that requiring the inspection of this contraband digital evidence while it remains in the care of law enforcement or the courts is unnecessary or inconvenient or burdensome to the defense. You might hear opinions that a court protective order alone should be sufficient to protect these graphic visual depictions of child sexual abuse. They may argue that there isn't a well-documented history of violations of such protective orders, and so additional legislative protective measures to secure digital evidence are unnecessary. As a digital forensics practitioner with graduate level education in digital forensics and training from organizations including the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Circuit Service, and the United States Department of Justice, please allow me to point out the fundamental technological flaw that underpins each of these arguments as it relates to digital evidence and court protective orders. Should contraband such as an ounce of heroin leave the control of law enforcement under a court protective order, and should part of that ounce be accidentally or intentionally kept, the incomplete return would be apparent and physically verifiable by weight, and the violation of the court protective order would be obvious to everyone. Digital evidence, however, does not follow the same rules of physics as physical evidence, such as that ounce of heroin. Should a forensic backup of a hard drive containing child pornography leave law enforcement control under court protective order? And should part or even all of that child pornography be accidentally or intentionally copied, retained, or distributed? There is no mechanism that would indicate such a violation of the court protective order ever occurred. It would only be possible to determine if the court protective order was violated by asking those who were granted unsupervised possession of the child pornography if they themselves violated the court order. Since no method exists to verify that no copies were retained and that all digital files were returned, a court protective order of child pornography constitutes little more in these cases than just a legal pinky swear. And that alone is not good enough to protect our kids. Because it is impossible to validate a court protective order as it pertains to digital evidence, if the availability of such orders remains in the bill, it should be clear that in the legislation that such court protective orders should only be issued as a last resort measure and only upon a substantial showing that law enforcement or the court failed to make the contraband child sexual exploitation material reasonably available for inspection and viewing, which leads me to my last observation that I would like to make. House Bill 2593 goes a long way to modernizing the judicial process in Oregon to balance protecting the rights of child victims with the rights of the defendants to examine digital evidence that may be offered against them. The bill correctly puts the onus on law enforcement or the court to make child sexual exploitation material evidence reasonably available for inspection by the defense. However, the bill, as written, does have one area that I believe needs to be improved or clarified. And this section might be addressed in one of the amendments. I'm not certain. But as used in Section 2, Paragraph 4, the phrase "a substantial showing" is not clearly obvious in its meaning within the context of the bill. If the intention of this legislation is to balance a defendant's rights with the privacy rights of the child victim by requiring law enforcement to secure this evidence while making it reasonably available for inspection by the defense, then I urge that the second sentence of this paragraph be amended such that it makes it clear to the court that court orders should only be issued upon law enforcement's failure to make the material reasonably available for inspection by the defense. I believe the small addition of clarifying language is necessary to contextually define what is meant by a substantial showing in order that the legislative intention of this bill can be better understood. I don't believe it is the legislative intention of this bill to allow a defendant to argue a substantial showing that it is merely inconvenient for their expert to travel to a law enforcement facility to examine the evidence. I believe it is the legislative intention of this bill to require law enforcement to protect this material while making it reasonably available for inspection and viewing, and only upon a substantial showing that it isn't being made reasonably available should the release of this inherently dangerous and easily duplicated child sexual exploitation material be granted under protective order as a measure of last resort to ensure the defendant's rights are honored if law enforcement fails to honor its obligation under this legislation. I'm cognizant that this legislation places additional burdens on law enforcement, the courts, and the defense. Yet such additional efforts on both part of the state and the defendant are warranted to ensure the rights of all persons, defendant and victim alike, are respected by the judicial process. I'm grateful and thankful to each of you for your consideration of this bill. Our children deserve our communal protection, and I greatly appreciate your willingness as legislators to help modernize our judicial process and in so doing protect our kids from unintentional re-victimization by the court system. I thank all of you, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, so I have a question. Somebody who talked to me about this that had a different perspective on it was saying sometimes the child, any of that kind of stuff, is old or maybe they're poor lighting, and so they need to really want to identify who is there. And of course, in defense, to show it isn't who you're saying it is. So they said sometimes they would need to take it so an expert could really evaluate that with more, with maybe equipment that wouldn't be available at the courthouse. I don't know, or at the. So how would they deal with something like that?
Well, generally, when, and I don't completely understand the concern, those concerns would obviously be in regards to material or images that were not already identified by NCMEC or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, who maintain a really big database on identified child victims. However, in those kinds of circumstances where, which I would think would be really unusual, I haven't heard of a circumstance where additional image manipulation needed to occur in order to make a positive identification of a child, save for a very few limited number of cases, specifically one of my own, in which a child was identified by an individualizing skin pigmentation deformation on her skin. In those cases, law enforcement made accommodations for those experts to be able to come to the facility, to be able to review the material, to use their own equipment at the law enforcement facility while it remained in the care and custody of law enforcement. And in that respect, I've had examiners in my office be there as long as 3 days, and we've made accommodations for them with a working space and power and everything else they need in order to do their work.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions of this panel? Thank you very much. Called Jillian Fisher and Gail Meyer. Yeah, please go first.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Jillian Fisher. I am here on behalf of the ODAA, the Association of District Attorneys, to testify in support of this bill in general. There have been discussions. We are trying to perfect, I think, some of the concerns that we have that were somewhat mentioned by the deputy from Linn County. There was a couple concerns about the language and how they the practical implications on how we do our daily handling of this type of material. But we do support a bill that otherwise makes it codifies the idea that these materials will not be duplicated in, but for very rare circumstances, particularly in the context of providing copies to the defense, as well as providing copies to experts. We would generally object to any copies being made, period. To explain some of the practical day-to-day implications of this bill from our office, so you folks understand how it is that we use this material currently. When we are preparing for a case that involves sexually explicit material of children, the DA's office does not have any more access to those immediate copies than the defense attorney. I do think that it may be a misunderstanding that the perception is that we have a copy of this in our file because they were provided by law enforcement to the DAs directly. That is not accurate. We do not have a copy of these materials in our file. If I want to access these materials or look at them in preparation for trial or for a grand jury, I, just as the defense attorney, would have to go to the law enforcement agency that has it in their possession, just like I would any other piece of evidence that is not releasable. I would go and I would view it generally in the presence of a deputy or law enforcement officer that is trained to show these materials. They don't provide a copy to me. I don't ever get a copy and I return to my office and prepare as I would. In the event that these materials are needed for trial as an exhibit, that is a scenario that would require maybe some manipulation of language in the statute for us to be able to provide an exhibit to the court or to a jury for the purpose of trial alone. The experience that I have with doing that is that the exhibit is created by the law enforcement agency of these specific exhibits that are being offered. They are provided to the court by the law enforcement agent at the time, and they were returned directly to the law enforcement agent to be entered back into evidence after trial is finished, and they stay there for any appeals process or any future proceedings. They never actually come to our office. There are a couple of concerns about some of the agencies around the state, including Department of Justice. They have agents that actually, within their office, analyze this data. And my understanding, and it may be the more appropriate for the deputy to clarify this, our officers, when they do an initial examination, make a copy of the entire hard drive or whatever it is that the material is being brought to them on as the physical evidence, the computer itself. A copy is made from that, and that is what is analyzed. I do think that as written, the statute would prohibit that first copy to be made by law enforcement to be analyzed. Our hope was to, with the Dash 3 amendments, address that issue. I don't think the language is quite precise enough yet to address that without also creating more opportunity for the DA's office to have copies. But with the exception of that issue, we are in support of this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Barker, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. This bill is a continuation of a discussion that started in 2009 with House Bill 2344 and again in 2013 with House Bill 3048. And essentially the resolution of those bills was, at least from my perspective of the conversation, was an acknowledgement that perhaps the legislature should simply let the courts be in charge of this and for the courts to decide this on a case-by-case basis. So some judges in some counties will make a ruling that everybody has to get into the law enforcement facility to view this evidence. Other counties and some judges in other counties make a determination on a case-by-case basis. Who are the lawyers? How far away is the expert coming from? How cumbersome and voluminous is all this? What's the nature of the evidence, et cetera? In some instances, the court has allowed a forensic image to be released to an expert under a protective order. What this looks like now is the defense, and again, a lot of these bills are written, I think, on the premise that what we're dealing with is child pornography on a computer hard drive. But more and more I'm hearing, too, that really this is morphing into a land of videos on handheld smartphones. Kids record the darnest things these days. So it's more and more morphing into that. But with respect to the hard drive analysis with the child pornography, it's an instance when, from the lawyer's standpoint, it's a very quick in and out. The lawyer goes in with the expert, sees the images and goes, yep, that's pornography, and then the lawyer's done. But what the expert has to do is basically run analysis, and that's why they need their own forensic, their own hard drive, their own mirror image, I should say, to do the analysis. You can find out things, whether or not the images have been digitally altered. Are these really adults that have been digitally altered to look like children? What time was the download done? Was this download done intentionally? Were there folders that made it look like this was very organized? Could this have been a pop-up? Could this have been a virus? Whatever. So the analysis is important from the side point of the defense. And so that's how that looks right now. There's amendments that are flying. The two prior bills, the one in 2009, 2013, were only applicable to the defense. And that was very, very, very concerning and problematic to us. And I've noted that I was reflecting. There's been several bills lately that certain people have taken, certain organizations have taken personally, that it was a personal attack on them. Definitely this was an instance where OCDLA felt personally attacked as criminal defense lawyers, that those prior bills only applied to the defense and didn't equally obligate the state. I will notice that in the Dash 3 amendment, that would happen yet again. The Dash 3 amendment would seek an ability for the prosecuting attorney or the law enforcement agency to get copies for investigative or prosecutorial purposes, but again, wouldn't allow that for the defense. Really, the problem the concern we have with 2593 is we seek yet one additional allowance. We really, with respect to subsection 4, which is where the court would make, could make an order allowing for a forensic backup of digital evidence to be distributed to the expert for the defense upon a certain showing. That really isn't where our concern is. Our concern is with the really super different case, the one with the video pretty much on the cell phone. Sometimes lawyers just simply need to get their hands on the evidence and review it over and over and over again. And that's the only way I can say it. If you read a bill six times, sometime on the seventh time you go, oh my gosh, look at that. I never saw that the first time through. And so it's the same thing sometimes with evidence. And so one of our members, Chair Barker, I think in your question you were trying to incorporate something I'd mentioned to you. One of our members actually had a case where it was a video of sexual activity occurring in a bedroom. One of the members was underage. It was very poorly lit. Questions arose. Who was talking when and who was saying what and who was where and when? And it was just one of those things where it's not the sort of thing that you saw just once. And so it appears to me from the Dash 3 amendment that somebody thought that it was important for prosecuting attorneys on occasion to get their hands on this stuff, and we submit from our perspective that on a rare occasion, and I say rare, it would be important for a defense lawyer also to at least be allowed to go to a court and ask a court for an order to allow the same. What's never happened is we've never had a sit-down amongst the parties that are of the stakeholders here. We've never had, not in 2009, not in 2013, and even yet now. We haven't had a sit-down with Department of Justice, the DAs, and the defense lawyers in the courts. We would like to see that done. I think that it would spare LC a bunch of additional amendments, because what I'm hearing is neither the Dash 1, 2, or 3 are ready to go. And if we all flood LC with a bunch of amendments, who knows what that would look like. I think we would benefit from sitting down and talking.
Any questions?
I have a question. Okay. So, Gail, tell me how Sub 4 doesn't get to a video on a phone.
Chair Barker, Representative Williamson, it may. I think it does. That's not our point. We don't really have that much of a problem with...
Because Sub 4 sounds like how you described things working now.
Yes. Well, things working now are county to county. Some judges do allow the forensic backup to be distributed directly to the expert under a protective order.
You've got a may in there, so that county by county, that wouldn't fix a problem of counties inconsistently applying
a
standard, right?
That'd be fine.
So tell me in a different way, the hard drive versus the cell phone video, and where you see a distinction.
Chair Barker and Vice Chair Williamson, perhaps I was inarticulate. I don't mean to suggest that. I'm saying that
I just not understand it.
With
fine too.
There's something discreet about child pornography. You see it, you know it, it's done. You don't have to look at it much. From the standpoint of the lawyer, we're of the view that as lawyers, sometimes there are those rare cases when it is very important to have access to evidence frequently and repeatedly as you're preparing for trial.
Okay, I get that. So it's not the technology that causes the distinction. It's potentially something being on a little phone as opposed to a larger screen or something like that. Okay.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, something other than a child porn case on a computer.
Gotcha. Thank you. Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williams, if I may, I'll just add on to that because I think I may have been the source of some of the confusion. I used the hard drive as the example of our concern of the initial copy made being prohibited by the statute. That would apply to a cell phone. Actually, I would agree. It's very often cell phones that contain that data, and what we call as a cell phone dump is one of, that's technically a copy being made for the purpose of dumping it into the program that does the analysis. I'm sure I'm being extremely inarticulate about.
No, I just wanted to make sure we were. It was technology agnostic as I was reading it, and it didn't. So, my question is answered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Detective. Can you come back up, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, John, you've listened to this testimony just now. I'm curious, how does that play out for your county with Linn County Sheriff's Office releasing that information to your district attorney's office down there?
As far as the production of, okay. As it plays for exhibits, any forensic backup to, which forensic backup, by the way, for clarification purposes, International Association of Computer Investigative Specialists, or IACES, is sort of the standard bearer for digital forensics and digital forensics terms. A forensic backup would include things like forensically acquired data from a cell phone and other sources, not just from hard drives, from computers. It's an umbrella term that is really any digital category. Moving on to your question, sir, how it's handled in Linn County currently is that forensic backups that contain contraband child pornography remain in the care and custody of law enforcement, and that if they do need to be presented in a court proceeding, that they remain in our care and they're presented from our custody to whoever it is that exhibit needs to be presented to, and then it immediately comes back into our custody and goes back into evidence, so that chain of custody is never broken. How it's done in other counties, I can't speak to, but that's how it's done in Linn County.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
So how, Gail talked about analyzing the data for things other than the content, right? Whether, when it was downloaded, all of that. So how does that work in the scenario you just talked about? When law enforcement has it, there's no copy given. How would either the prosecutor or the defense figure out that the other information that a file might provide that's not the visual image?
So forensic examination of digital evidence can be a very quick process, and it can take some time, especially with larger data sets that can encompass terabytes of information. How it works in Linn County and in many other areas of Oregon is that law enforcement makes accommodations, and very good accommodations, I might add, where we provide a workspace complete with a desk and power and really whatever else that examiner feels that they may need. On occasion, I even provided a computer and access to forensic software that defense supplied specialist didn't have access to in order to conduct their review of the evidence. So it's working between the practitioners within the field to make sure that accommodations are made. And it is really, this bill really codifies into law what is, what I believe should be the standard in Oregon, which is that practitioners and professionals can work together to make sure that the material is protected, but also that they have adequate and reasonable access to be able to conduct those examinations. I've had examiners in my office for as long as 3 complete work days conducting their examination. That was a fairly large case with a lot of evidence, but we accommodated them. We made sure that they had what they needed in order to do that.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You want me to?
Yeah.
Are we in a work session then?
We are.
Okay. So, it's your birthday.
Yeah. You know, so. Too much sugar.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments into House Bill 2593.
Representative Olson moves the -1 into House Bill 2593. Does anybody need an explanation of that? Are there any objections? Seeing none, it's ordered.
And, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2593.
Representative Olson moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2593. Are there any objections? Seeing none, it's ordered. And the bill's not ready. Okay. So we're done. Close the public hearing on, or the work session on House Bill 2593. No further business to come before the committee. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. Business to come before the committee. We stand adjourned. Thank you.